And that's why I wrote this book on creative financing, because that's the solution. When lenders pull back out of the market, people still wind up with problems. How do we solve those problems if you just can't go get a loan and just write checks to do it? Creative financing.
Hello, everybody. It's Jake Stensley. I host the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano? Gotta say, I'm excited for today's podcast. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is no stranger to danger. He's no stranger to the WBP family. He started in multifamily over 15 years ago with a single duplex. Man, it's kind of getting creative starting like that, you know. Started with a duplex and quickly grew to over 1,500 units. He is a coach, he is a mentor, and now he is the author of the upcoming book, Creative Cash. Show that sucker, G-Dad. So without further ado, TBH, Mr. Bill Hamm. Welcome back. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Jake, we are doing really good.
I have to butt in and I have to tell everybody the story how Jake and Gino met Bill Hamm, because it's really important, because this is what all real estate investors need to be doing post-COVID. We need to be going to events. You know, picture this, July 2017, I think it was. Yeah. It was a hot day in Atlanta. I am in this hotel, this crappy part of the city in Atlanta.
Look at the old Olympics.
It was space, just, right? Yeah. It was just not good, right? The air conditioning was leaking outside. But you know what? It was a great event because there was a lot of great real estate investors in there. A lot of people in the space were there, and about 100 people. And Jake and Gino presented, and I didn't even get the chance to meet Bill Hamm because Bill Hamm was there. But we got introduced after Bill left, and he was, you know, finishing off, you know, coaching with the group. He was in the middle of his investing portfolio, and Jake and Gino, we needed a coach because we were getting burned out, right? We didn't have a system as far as coaching. So I got on the call with Bill and we struck up a conversation, and I like to say, I think the rest is history.
Yeah.
It's value for value. Bill's an amazing teacher. He's an amazing student. He's an amazing content creator. We had a platform that we were starting to grow. We married it together. And that's what I want everyone to think of. You know, what value do you have out there for the marketplace? If you have value in the marketplace, you will be found. And I think Bill is the type of person, he's the type of person that he seeks to serve. He's not out there just for himself, right? Because he's a fiduciary for his investors. He's an amazing coach for the Jake and Gino community. He's an amazing educator. And that's what we needed. And I think we were able to allow to give him a platform to do that, right? And Jake is giving those hands on YouTube.
Alignment,
right?
Of values, baby. Alignment, yes, of values, right?
It's like a marriage. And I've had a really amazing, you know, experience with Bill. I've learned so much over the last 3 years. We're going to talk about a lot of it in the book, The Three Pillars of Real Estate, The Spy Technique. We've trademarked a lot of this stuff with him because it's revolutionary. The information's out there, but the way Bill puts it all together nice and neat for you to understand these frameworks, it's been an amazing experience to me. And I just want to say thanks for being part of my journey. Absolutely. I know I have one criticism though. In the book, in the book, my wife opens the book and she's like, wow, Bill gave me a really nice acknowledgement. And by the way, Gino, you only got one line. I'm like, dude, really? I'm competing with my wife on acknowledgements, but that's the only criticism I have.
That makes you smart. What are you talking about, man? Come on.
Well, you know, and I'll tell the story. If it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't have written the book at the moment. You know, we were at one of the events and we were just in the break room, and I remember what we were talking about. And Julia said, you should write that down. And I said, yeah, I should. She said, you should write a book. And I said, okay. And now we have a book. So it was really her saying, you should write a book. And you know, if it wasn't for her giving me the impetus, I probably wouldn't have done it.
So let's go into that, because we're educators. We talk about mentorship. We talk about investing in your education. What was that? Because you're a coach. What makes people successful when they educate? Because if it wasn't for education for me, I wouldn't have met Jake. I wouldn't have been able to buy multifamily. I wouldn't have been able to meet you. I want to be able to grow Jake and Gino. It's all one step after the next. And we believe in it, Jake and I. And my wife became a coach because of that. You know, what was that spark? I mean, it couldn't have been just to get write a book. I mean, what was it?
So was it the book intended specifically or teaching? Which
both. Exactly? I want both. I really want both.
Yeah. All right. Starting on a high level, I started teaching twofold. One, I'll give you the holistic comment. I enjoy teaching. I just enjoyed it and always have. The real answer, twofold. One, it pays well. Two, it's excellent networking. It's exposure. And that's the real lesson, and that's the real message in why I ultimately started teaching. As I've, you know, I've taught for someone before you two, and what I realized was that being a coach and gave me the ability to get on stage, gave me the ability to network one to many. Mm-hmm. That was my key, because I was in a lot of real estate rooms and seminars, and I kept networking one to one. You know, you're handing out business cards and this kind of stuff, and that's great. But I realized I needed a way to super steroid my networking. And so I realized it was exposure, and that was the answer. And so I started to think, well, what's the fastest way in my world for me to get exposure? And it was to create content and then share that content. Well, that form came the manner of coaching and teaching and mentoring. Then it kind of turned into public speaking. Then I was doing MC work and then hosting some of these events. I've done that for you guys at some of your events. And so it just kind of was a progression. And then I would say the book is the last level of that exposure. You know, writing a book, and this is for anybody listening, it's not a heavy money generating item. Nobody's getting rich writing a book, not unless you're, you know, Stephen King or some kind of super high level author. What a book is it's a give back, number one. Number two, it's a 200-page business card, isn't it? It's a way for you to go out and share and create value for others while exposing yourself to the world. And that's how we create opportunity, is that exposure. So that's why I really ultimately started teaching.
But Bill, as far as teaching, when you have a student who's contemplating the mentorship and not, why should they join the mentorship? I can be out here screaming at the top of my lungs saying, hey, if it wasn't for my two mentors back 10, 12 years ago, I wouldn't know where to start. I made thousands and thousands of dollars in mistakes. We were just talking before on the call. Some students are really locked in. They get on the calls with you. Why should they pursue mentorship?
Right. Well, tuition. Simple word. You're going to pay it here or on the street. Mm-hmm. Nothing's free. In business and success, and your education is not going to be free. The question is, how do you want to pay for that education? You know, you can accelerate your education by working with a mentor and us or whomever, but by getting a coach and getting someone that can really accelerate your education, or you can just run the gauntlet every day. You can just get out on the street in trial and error every part of your business and you know, fail and succeed every single day and give it a shot. You know what? I've done both. And there's a
Force
lot
of value, Bill.
There's a lot to be said for both. And that's what I'm going to tell you. There, you definitely should get an education in order to accelerate your practice. It's kind of like we can practice, but uneducated and unskilled practice is kind of a waste of time. So it's like, if I want to learn how to swing a golf club or some kind of sport, yes, I can just go out there and start cracking at a ball with a stick. But if I don't have somebody actually say, hey, look, hold on, here's the correct way, mm-hmm. I'm probably going to practice incorrect techniques. And I'm probably going to spend a lot of time learning the hard way when I really could have just accelerated that by going over here and investing in some education. You know, so, but again, nothing's free. We understand that education comes at an expense, but books are 12, 15 bucks these days. Get one, you know, read everything you can read, all the podcasts you can get a hold of. And then when you're ready to go to the next level and start investing in your education, do it, because it'll accelerate your business tremendously. And like I said, you're going to spend your tuition, you know, with us or with someone, or blood, sweat, and tears on the street. Either way, mm-hmm. whatever you like works. But
education times action equals results. That's what we say. And I was taking massive action early on. I was not educated in multifamily and I was making tons of mistakes. Yeah. What it does also, you have certain inflection points in life. You don't know what you don't know. This is our third book that we're launching with Bill. Our first book was tough launching. We bootstrapped the entire thing. Jake and I were on an island ourselves. The second book, better. But we still were learning. The third book, we've worked with Scribe. It's been a pleasure. We've paid with them. We've paid for a process. Bill shaking his head. He's seen how methodical and how easy. Can you imagine mm-hmm. Bill and Jake and Gino doing this by ourselves, Bill? This has been a pleasure to write this, right? All the editing, the going through the creation of the front cover and the whole marketing. It's been a lot easier. So I'm a big advocate of it because, you know, when you haven't done something, you don't know how to do it. And if there's somebody out there, success leaves clues. Follow that person, follow them, resonate with them. And it, like Bill said with my wife, the only thing my wife did to Bill, I think, is held him accountable. She made him say it. He put it out there. And all of a sudden, I can't let Julia down. I don't know why he can't let Julia down, but there's something about not letting my wife down. You know, she's only 5'4", so she's a tough little broad, but that's the bottom line, you know, getting on those calls every couple of weeks, saying, how are things going? And just holding him accountable. I think that's what coaching and mentorship allows you to do. You've got skin in the game now. Now, Bill all of a sudden set it out there and put it out there. I'm going to write this book. And he pulled it through with the accountability and the hard work. So kudos to you, Bill.
And I'll add one other thing as far as is, you know, students, the value of an education or why you should get an education. And you started to hit on this comment early on. It's bring value. And that's kind of my comment has always been number one rule of business, always have something to trade. If you don't have anything to trade, you don't have any value. If you don't have any value, why is someone likely to do business with you? Mm-hmm. They're not. Well, what do? In most of our deals, we syndicate, which means you're going to go out and find investors and raise money. The first objection you're going to run into when you're new to that, hey, you've never done this before. Why should I invest with you? You've never done this before. If you've never done this before, the answer should be, you're right, I've never done this before. But then you better be able to speak to the education. You better be able to back up and go, yes, but I'm a part of this and I've got this mentor and this and this and this. So I understand I've never done it before, but let me discuss my safety net that I have in place. And that's the education. So if you really haven't done it before, you have no experience and no education, why should someone do business with you? They probably won't.
I love that. Before I get into the question part of this, I want to make one more comment. This is why Jake and Gene are together. When I met Jake and back in 2009, I started my education, my mentorship. When we got together in 2011, Jake moved down to the market. His value was amazing. He lived in the market. He was a hard worker. He was a hustler. He had all the values that I was looking for. He had the goals that I wanted. I had the education. So that was the value that I brought to Jake, right? And we got together. And without that education, we wouldn't be here. Because we wouldn't have been able to start, I wouldn't have been able to underwrite a deal, talk to a broker, select the market, do all that work that I needed to do. So, you know, you could say I was lucky that I met Jake. No, I was prepared. I think people who are prepared and work hard ultimately get lucky. If I didn't have that education, I wouldn't be here right now. So I love the point you made. You know, you didn't start with a pile of money, okay? How creative did you have to get starting out in the game?
Very broke makes you very creative. Broke is the mother of creativity.
That's right.
As you all know, I was a pilot. I quit my job. I had one duplex. It was cash flowing about $300 if I didn't have to fix anything, and I had about $10,000 saved up. So I had to learn how to do business quickly and without experience or a ton of cash. And that's where I started off without the education and really did spend a lot of time out on the street, just running the gauntlet of real estate and getting beat down a lot. And that's why I'm telling you from experience, you know, education accelerates the model. But I started off early on and had to be creative because I had no experience and no job and no money. So only one way to go, right? But what I learned how to do is to solve problems, go out and identify someone that had a need that I could create some value for. And that's where I developed a lot of the techniques that we have in the book here, such as you've pointed out, the spy technique. That was one of the tricks that I developed out on the street, building my portfolio, the beginning portfolio, the three pillars of real estate. All of those techniques came from those early years of just trial and error out on the street. And I always tell everybody, look, information is passed on only by those that survive, you know? And so I'm here telling you this because I made it. Mm-hmm. Everybody else got washed away and their techniques went with them. So because I'm still here, because these techniques were forged out on the real street of business, they work, you know, they mm-hmm. do.
I'm going to go into the book itself, right? The three pillars of real estate and the spy technique, because there's a lot of teaching in there that I want to convey to the listeners out there. But why did you write Creative Cash? What about this time period right now?
Well, other than your 5'4" wife holding my arm behind my back and making me write the book, it's actually market cycles. And that's really what happened, Gino.
We didn't get into the abuse component of this just yet, but we can get there.
I wrote the book simply because it's time for this information. This is information that I've had and have used in different market cycles. And that's one of the things we talk about, the three pillars of real estate for anybody listening. I'll give you the quick background. It's debt, market cycle, and exit strategy.
Everyone write that down. Number one is debt. Number two is the market cycle. And number three is exit strategy. That's the three pillars of real estate that Bill's compiled, put together.
They're not necessarily in that order. So they all kind of three combined. So it's not an order. But understanding market cycle, that's where we are economically, where the market is and where it's going. And so I believe going into a recession period, which is where we're headed, one of the first things that you see is lenders start to pull back. Well, you know, what we know is that lending is sort of the is the engine of the market, right? As Will Coleman likes to say, it's a circular engine of the market. And I agree with him completely. Lenders really control a lot of our economy. Well, when lenders get nervous, because now keep in mind, lenders are up on the high hill looking way further out than we are. When lenders get nervous, they start doing things like making you put up a year's worth of taxes, insurance, interest, which we see Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac doing right now. They start to pull back loan to value. We see lenders doing that right now. The lenders have a flight to quality. They underwrite the distressed assets much more carefully. Basically, the lending pulls back. When that occurs, we go into a recession cycle. And that's why I wrote this book on creative financing, because that's the solution. When lenders pull back out of the market, people still wind up with problems. How do we solve those problems if you just can't go get a loan and just write checks to do it? Creative financing. And so that's why I wrote the book, because it's coming up. It's something that I think is going to be first comment. I've had bits of creative financing through almost every deal I've ever done throughout all market cycles. So it just becomes more prevalent in a down cycle. Why? Because when people have problems in a really up cycle, they just sell a property. Well, in a down cycle, when you can't go out and get that loan so easily and the seller needs to exit, they may have an issue. And that in lies where we can start using some creative financing, which I believe we're going to see heavily in 2021 and very much in 2022.
So everyone has to really think about the three pillars of real estate. Use it holistically, because when I first started investing, I didn't really think of an exit strategy. And this is very important for everybody. You know, we're talking about now may be a longer time hold period, right? Jake and I, we always said, you know, long hold period. Well, we sold off a couple of assets in the last 18 to 24 months because they've elevated so much. Now, every time we buy a deal, I want everyone to get out the binoculars. And I want you to think of the three pillars of real estate. Think of where you are in the market cycle. Couple that with your exit strategy and then the debt component. And if you put all three of those together, we're trying to mitigate our risk. That's all we're trying to do. I think what I want Bill to do is, how do you underwrite a deal for creative financing? I think everyone out there only looks at it from that lens. What do you do when you're looking at a deal and you're using creative financing?
Well, I think the first comment would be, how do we go out and find creative financing deals? And the answer is, you don't. You do not. And that's the mistake that I think so many people make, is that they think that they're supposed to go out and find a master lease option deal or a seller financing deal. And that's the incorrect point of view about creative financing. Creative financing is to simply increase probability of close. That's it. It's if you analyze a deal the way you always analyze deals, the way we teach you in our classes to analyze deals, and you sit down and you analyze the deal and you say, this does not work with traditional lending. You know, today's interest rates and today's loans are like this. You plug that data in and the numbers come out bad. You then stop and ask yourself, why do these numbers not work? And I'm going to assume the numbers being the cash flow is too low. All right. Why is the cash flow too low? Well, it's going to be one of two things. Either the property is not producing enough income or the price is too high. You know, there's going to be something in there. All right. So let's say there's something wrong with the property. Then we say, okay, can we create an offer that solves that problem? So this is why I'm kind of going a long, long way of answering the question, is you don't really analyze creative financing. You analyze a deal like you're just going to purchase it. When it doesn't work, We zero in on why does it not work. And then you carefully craft an offer that solves whatever that issue is. So if it's overpriced, you know, it may be that you do something like a lease option where you can control the property, but you don't actually have to go and purchase it with new debt until the value rises, you know, things of that nature. But we could get into more detail on exactly how to analyze a lease option. That's a little further, but yeah, Jay.
No, I was just going to say, I think the key is to let it unfold. If you lead with this, you're going to reek of desperation. If you lead with, hey, I want to do seller financing or something like that, people are going to think you're not credible and you can't stroke a check. Yes. And they're going to basically be repelled by that. So I think the key is, in any transaction, to Bill's point, underwrite it like you normally would and then let the deal unfold. We did a 281 unit deal, fully owner financed. Okay. And what I mean by that is the owner financed our down payment. We didn't lead with that. To Bill's exact example, we didn't like the cash flow where it currently was, but we liked it if he was just going to give us the keys, meaning essentially, you know, we took the property over with nothing up front. So you need to let the process unfold and not come out of the gate saying, hey, you want to hold a note? Because they're going to say, hey, get the hell out of here. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And that's what's going to happen. So
the worst thing you can do is call up or reach out to some kind of realtor and say, hey, I'm looking for a deal that I can do seller financing on. Hey, lease option deals that we can do. No, you're going to come straight off as I'm a loser. I have no money and I can't close. And they're not going to take a phone call again. So never approach someone asking for or looking for creative offers or financing. It's when you identify that there's a problem. You then have to go back and say, hey, seller, realtor, whoever you're talking to, there's a problem. Here's the problem. The numbers suck. Okay, here's how I can solve that problem if your seller is interested in having me help them. Here's the offer. You know, and that's where we created the SPY technique.
So guys, I want everyone listening, if you want to buy the book, go to www.creativeapartmentdeals.com. creativeapartmentdeals.com. Check out that website. It's got a ton of information on there. We have certain giveaways. We have a seller. We have a masterclass that Bill and I put together on creative financing. Before you start talking to brokers, educate yourself, because you need to have a team around you. You need to have a CPA that understands this so you can lean on that person, right? You need to have a broker who you can explain this to, and you need to be able to actually explain this to the seller and make sense, because there's a lot of benefits to seller financing, right? If they can't close in the deal, all of a sudden there may be some tax liabilities that you may be able to push out into the future, right? You may be able to tell the person, what are you doing with the money, Mr. Seller? Well, I'm going to put it in the bank. Well, how about making 5% instead of 1%? These are all techniques and strategies that are in the book. And I think this is just another tool in the toolbox of using the buy. You know, we talk about buy right, manage right, and finance right at Jake and Gino. This is an amazing tool. We've done over $20 million in owner finance deals, Jake and Gino and Bill collectively. Bill, his first 400 units, he didn't even walk into a bank the first 400 units. You know, so these techniques work. You just have to know when to use them, how to use them, and to be able to educate the other side. Bill, you nailed on the SPY technique. I want you to share that SPY technique with everybody, because this is not just for owner financing. This is for life. Whatever you want in life, this is how you should approach life.
Yeah. So what I realized early on in teaching students creative financing, and what I started to do was to study the students, myself included, the deals that got accepted. Why did my deal get accepted? Why did these students get their deals accepted? And then there was this other group of students that seemed to constantly fail at creative financing. Why were they not getting deals accepted? And so that's, as a teacher, that became my focus for a long time, was really studying my own students and figuring out what were the ones that were being successful doing differently. And what I realized was, it was what I ultimately created was what we call the SPY technique. It's a way of approaching a seller and solving problems in order. And so the SPY stands for seller, property, you. And that's the order in which you want to create a problem-solving offer and approach the situation. So you sit down and you research and you say, what is wrong with the seller? Or what does the seller need? What are the seller's needs here? We're gonna solve that. Then what does the property need? That may be deferred maintenance, repairs, renovation, whatever. And then lastly, we're going to decide what is it that you as the buyer need. And you're going to make an offer that solves those problems in that order. And what I found is the students that were not being successful with creative financing were typically reversing the order. They were going in and saying, what is it that I want? What is it that I need? They were then maybe looking at the property and said, okay, and the property needs these repairs, and almost never actually considering the seller in the equation. And so what I've come to realize is that a good deal is probably 90% seller, 10% real estate. If you don't have a good, if you don't have a willing seller, you're gonna struggle. We were talking about this before you guys even started the recording, of having some trouble negotiating with some people. Yeah, exactly. Real estate's real estate. It sticks, bricks, and mud. If you don't have a seller that's willing to do business, you're going to struggle in all of it, right? And so that's why I created a spy technique of sit down and really talk to that seller, find out what are their needs, make sure that offer hits those points. Then the offer should help you mitigate whatever issues are on the property. Lastly, is the offer good for you? So that's the spy technique. So
everyone write that down. Number one is seller. Number two is the property. Number three is you. And if you really think of it from that perspective, you're really trying to create value for that seller. And, you know, Jake and I, in that 281 unit deal that Jake was discussing, the seller was motivated because he tried to sell it to his brother. That failed. He wanted to go out, buy a Porsche, and drive the countryside. So he was motivated, right? And he's getting a big lump of cash. He had his family involved. So what Bill really is talking about is a mom and pop, right? Mom and pops come in all shapes and sizes. They can be brand new buildings. You can have a contractor, construction company build a class A property, but they hate the management of it. It could be a brand new, beautiful property. There's value there. Value through operation. Not renovation, as Mr. Bill Hamm likes to say in this part of the cycle. Think about that. Just the operations of the property may be off. We've bought a lot of properties where there's family infighting, partner disputes. There's just been a lot of motivation from being burned out, from just not wanting to be a landlord, from having to move across country, from getting a better opportunity, whatever that is. That spy technique will help you flush that out. I would also tell everybody, listen to the podcast that we've done with Chris Voss, because I know Bill Hamm is a huge proponent of Chris Voss. Go and listen to our podcast with Chris Voss. They're amazing. They will help you with that spy technique. You're always out there seeking information on the other side. What can you do for them as far as trying to solve their problems? I think that's really important, Bill.
Yeah. And in the book, you know, I go into complete detail on how to actually step-by-step apply these techniques. We're kind of discussing them in generalities here. But in the book and in our masterclass that we have at the creativeapartmentdeals.com, we go step by step. Gina and I go step by step on how to actually apply these techniques. I won't give you too much of a spoiler alert, but how to work with realtors and get realtors to accept the spy technique is the secret sauce. The majority of our deals, larger deals, are going to come from realtors. And if you don't know how to work with a realtor, likelihood they're going to lampoon your offer and head it off long before it ever even gets to the owner. So there's a whole chapter in there on that, on how to actually apply these techniques.
So I got to share a story with Jake and the entire community about Bill and myself recording seller financing masterclass. Bill gets in early one morning, Wednesday morning, comes up into my office where I am right now. We're sitting down and all of a sudden I get a knock on the door. My wife is here. We're all fixing up the camera. We're getting all ready. And Veronica says to me, there's somebody at the door. I'm like, who could be at the door at 9 o'clock in the morning? Well, I walk downstairs, walk up. There's this police officer in my door, about 6'5", big dude. And he's like, can I look around? I'm like, what's going on? He goes, somebody called 911. So I right away look at my kids and go, dudes, who called the cops? Right?
Kids getting beat. Junior's beating people. Man, someone's going down to the barber house.
And nobody said anything. Quiet as they all looked at me. So, you know, let him go upstairs, let him go back down. I come back into the office and I'm like, can you believe it? A cop drove by here. And Bill's like, whew, I can't believe it. I think I swiped the phone and went emergency and called the cops on you. I'm like, dude, what a way to start the day, huh, my friend? So,
yeah, I was going to turn my phone off so it wouldn't buzz or, you know, ring for our recording. And I went to slide right. I have an Apple. I went to slide right and I didn't slide right on the off button. I slid right on the SOS button and then realized, oh, God, I just called the cops. So that I hung the phone up. That was a mistake. I should have let it connect and then said, hey, my bad. And told
him, how long did it take?
Phone up. It triggered them to emergency show up at Gina's front door.
Well, Bill's amazed. They were there in 3 minutes, I think. It was
fast. Dude, I can't even get through your security guard in 3 minutes. Every time I come, they're like, let me see your license. Let me see this. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to see Gino. All right, let me in the second place.
But the bigger story for this is for all the parents out there. And it's an energy block that we call in coaching. It's called an interpretation. I made an interpretation of that situation and I thought for sure it was one of my children. I could have ruined my day. I could have yelled at my kids. I could have blamed them and it wasn't their fault. Nope. Get all of the information. That's part of the spy technique. Get all that information before you make a determination. Does the seller really want the highest price or does he want a certainty of close? right? Does he want all of his cash now? What's he going to do with his money? So don't have an interpretation. Don't interpret what the other side wants. Really learn what's going on. And, you know, 99 out of 100 times, I probably would have been right. We probably would have been one of my kids. But that one time that you're wrong, you lose out on a deal.
How'd you figure out, though, that it was Bill?
Because when
Bill, a 45-year-old kid,
Bill came back into the house and he saw the cop and he's like, oh damn. I'm like, what? And he's like, oh, I called the cops. I'm like, oh man, I was about to rip into my kids.
And the way they got there was through GPS. They were able to track the phone.
I would assume so, yeah. Because yeah. I immediately turned the phone, I mean, like off like that. And within 3 minutes, they were at the door. And of course, you know, I mentioned that too. I said, gosh, that's interesting that the police showed up that quickly. And you know what Gina said? Oh, they were probably over here patrolling the beach anyway.
great living in Florida, my friend. So
they're probably sitting on the beach. They said it's not.
Holy shit, we actually got to do something today.
But you know, the moral of the story is let the police in, let them do what they want to do. They actually had to come upstairs and go through the house just to make sure there's nothing wrong. So let them do that. And afterwards, that interpretation. Don't interpret any situation. I can give you another quick story about my wife with interpretations, right? This is important, everybody. She goes to the beach one day. She's got her phone. She's all jazzed up. She wants to become a coach. So she texts me. I don't have my phone on me. My phone is in my drawer right now. I don't look at it every 20 minutes. And she says, hey, Gino, what about me becoming a life coach? What do you think? So I don't get back to her. 3 minutes later, she's in total despair. She's like, he thinks I'm a loser. What a stupid, you know, what a stupid comment. How could I even think of that? So I see her 2 hours later and she says, did you get my text? I said, no, what text? Oh, here it is. Oh, she interpreted that I got the text from her and I just thought it was a stupid idea and I didn't text her back. So don't make those interpretations in life. If that broker doesn't call you back, don't think he didn't call you back because he doesn't like you or she doesn't like you. Maybe they didn't get the email. Maybe it went to junk. Maybe they're too busy. Maybe they got out of multifamily. Don't make interpretations in life. Get all of the facts. Don't make it all emotional. Use your logic involved. You need emotion in life, but you need logic and you need the facts before you make any determination. So
sharing
a couple of stories of my life. So it's good stuff. One question really before we go to the short answers, Bill, you know, can you describe what a master lease option is? Because there's very little information out there, what master lease options are, how you've used them and why everyone needs to learn this technique right now.
Sure. There's very limited information out there for now.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
as we get the book out there, there will not be limited information any further. Mm-hmm. Okay, shameless plug aside. Master lease option basically is a rent to own. We use this term master when we're talking about multiple apartments. If you're dealing with single family, it's really the same thing as a lease option. Mm-hmm. You're renting this apartment complex with the right to sublet those units. You're setting the price today, but you're giving yourself a certain amount of time in the future in which to purchase the property at that price. For example, you know, Gino and I agree I'm going to buy his property for $1 million, but I have 3 years in which to exercise my right to buy that property for $1 million. Why would I do that? Well, because probably the property is distressed in some manner, and I'm going to use this agreement to go in and straighten out the operations while not having to actually purchase the building. So we're going to leave the note in Gino's name. I'm going to come in, do the heavy lift, bring whatever money, effort. Maybe he's that burned out landlord we talked about. I'm going to fix the property up, get it stabilized. Now it'll qualify for a good loan. Hopefully we've pushed the value above that $1 million mark that we agreed on. And then I go and purchase the asset in the future. So that's roughly what a lease option is for.
Nice. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Hey all, Dylan McGow here, Senior Business Advisor with the Jake and Gino team. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. I wanted to take a quick second here to share something that I'm extremely proud of and has been crucial in my multifamily investing journey, which is the Jake and Gino mentorship community. When I made the decision to build a multifamily investment business, I knew I needed someone in my corner that could help guide me through the process to get me to my goals quicker and frankly, with a lot less mistakes than trying to figure it out on my own. Which is when I made the decision to join the mentorship community in early 2018. And since then, working with Jake and Gino, as well as strong partners in the community, I've been able to grow my multifamily portfolio to just over 400 units. And last year, joined the Jake and Gino team as a senior business advisor, just to help ensure students have everything they need within the community to be successful in the multifamily space. I wanted to take a minute here to invite you to book a time to connect with me. During this complimentary strategy session, we'll take the time to dive into you and your multifamily goals and seeing if working together would be a good fit. One thing I can promise is that whether we work together or not, my personal goal is to provide value and always leave someone in a better position. And I'm confident our team's able to do that with the resources we possess. To get the conversation started, you're going to want to go to jakeandgino.com/apply. Once again, that's jakeandgino.com/apply. Hope to talk with you soon.
All right, we are back. I want to talk about some cash, the most profitable creative cash. What is, and we don't got to get into it too much, but what has been the most profitable strategy that you discuss in the book that you've used?
Good one. The most profitable, yeah, probably the spy technique, probably follow through, really going out and looking at deals on a regular basis. That's probably, I show you how to go out and look at deals and to source deals. And I'd say that's probably one of the strongest techniques is to be able to bring deals in on a regular basis. We call it deal flow, you know, because it's a numbers game. And as I've told everybody, and I kind of mentioned in the book, you will typically close about 1 in 80 deals that you analyze. And so using creative financing just increases that number to maybe we get 3 or 4 out of 80, you know. And so deal flow, getting to that 80, that race to 80, that's probably one of the strongest things that I can share with people is because, again, it's a numbers game. And if you're not looking at deals on a very regular basis, the likelihood that you're going to find a good deal is certainly lessened. You know, I'll say this, and this is in the book. I can tell you and all your listeners everything you need to know about real estate in one sentence. That's it. Ready?
Hit it.
Know the values in your area. Look at more deals than anybody else.
And here's the thing too. If you're closing, even if it's, you know, 3 in 80 instead of 1 in 80, that's 240 deals that you're looking at. That's 80 versus, you know, guys, this is huge.
Exactly.
I mean, you do the math on that. It's tremendous.
Exactly. And see, and there's my sentence, right? If you know the values in the area, you know what things are worth, you'll know when something's a good deal or not because you know what things are worth. If you don't know what something's worth, how are you going to know it's a good deal or not? You're not. So it's know the values in the market that you're working in and just look at more deals in the competition.
Guys, I got to mention this also. With creative financing, it allowed Jake and myself to get into our first deal. So using that technique, we probably would have not gotten into that first deal. And the 281 units, it's been an absolute home run. But forget about what it's done. It allowed us to get into the deal with none of our own cash. We actually walked away from the table with $100,000. The title agent was actually looking at it because going, I mean,
haven't I've never seen this before.
So, and when someone tells you it's not possible, don't listen to them.
Agreed.
Because it's possible. You just have to learn how to do it, right? We had done one already. We were already educated. The bank that we were working with knew us. We had our credibility book out there. We knew what we were doing. We already had a couple hundred units and we're solving a problem. And the seller was completely fine with it. So getting educated on this will allow you to get into multifamily if you don't have the capital. It's one of the great strategies for us. We landed our first deal and we landed our fifth deal on it. So you can get into multifamily if you learn how to use these techniques.
That reminds me of something I always tell people. Look, success isn't about possibility. It's about probability. Anything's possible. Mm-hmm. Is it probable? Mm-hmm. And in creative cash is about increasing probability. Mm-hmm. It's just about increasing your chances. You know, anything's possible, but are you doing it on a regular basis? Are you practicing like we talked about accurately? Are you underwriting and analyzing deals accurately? Is what you do day in and day out as accurate as it could be? That's what our education and our information is about. It's about increasing probability, not possibility. Anything's possible.
So, Bill, I need you to share your definition of insanity with the listeners, because this is something that we talk about within the Jake and Gino community, right? The definition of insanity, go ahead and tell them what you think.
Yeah, I always ask class, usually when I'm teaching class as well, I'll say, what is the common definition of insanity? You know, then everybody always answers, oh, it's doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. And then I ask, well, what's the definition of practice? You know, practice is the definition of practice is doing the same thing over and over, not only expecting a different result, doing it until you get a different result. And practice is not insane. The only thing insane is our meme concept about insanity. And by the way, doing the same thing over and over and getting a different result is not in any definition the definition of insanity. In no book. That is a social meme that somehow has been created and passed around. It is not technically the definition of insanity anywhere, but it is definitely the definition of practice. And so that's why I really don't like that concept of people thinking that practicing is insane. It's not, you know, you're going to sit there and do it over and over and over and demand a different result and do it until you get one. That's practice, and success takes practice. You know, let's practice as accurately as we can. That's what we hope you do. Yeah, if you're not willing to put in the elbow grease, you're not willing to take a few bumps on the head and, as you're learning and in doing, you're just not going to be successful. Simple as that.
I think you also made a great point of being a student of the game, understanding your market, knowing what deals have traded for. It's funny because I'll interact with brokers in my market and they don't even know what some of the other deals are traded for that they're not involved in. I'm like, gang, you gotta know this stuff because they're sometimes maybe trying to price our deals lower. And I'm like, look, this asset down the road traded for this, and they weren't even aware of it. So you need to be a student of your market, but also the surrounding market and the sister city so you can see what's coming. If there's a market close to you that may be a little bit bigger or growing, know what they're doing because it may be coming to a neighborhood near you. So I think it's key to really be a student of the game when it comes to your markets. What about a tip for scaling? You created your own property management company. You've been in the game for a long time. Do you have any tips for folks, starting out scaling their business?
Yeah, I always, this is kind of in the concept of management, but I always tell everybody you should manage, then not manage, then manage again, in that order.
Oh.
So in the very beginning, I think it is good for you to go out and kind of get your hands dirty with a few smaller properties, learn property management a little bit, be a little bit of a landlord. It's okay. Then when you start getting a handful of units, you know, then you probably want to stop and bring on third-party management, because at that point in time, you are going to get in the property management weeds. And keep in mind that building a property management company is a completely separate company than a real estate company. It comes with its own set of problems, its own set of distractions, you know, its own set of opportunity costs. So that's why I tell people they should manage in the beginning to get the education. Then stop when you get your company into that kind of small range, outsource to third party, learn to asset manage. Then when you get about 500 units or so in a market, then you can maybe 1,000 units, then you can go back and bring property management in-house, because you'll have enough economy of scale to be able to hire some bench talent. You'll be able to get some people to come on with some resumes. You know, in the very beginning, and this was my process, I've been managing since day one. And we went through a hard phase in the middle, what we call the teenage years, where our company sort of had the pimples and the zits and the awkwardness and all that, you know, where I was wearing all the hats because I just didn't have enough money and enough revenue and enough economy of scale to go to the next level of hiring staff. I needed more property to hire the staff. I needed the staff so that I could go find the property and stop working. You get caught kind of chasing your tail. So when you're scaling, that's why I say do it and then don't do it and then come back and do it again.
Gina, who else said that?
Who else said that?
Remember, you had the wise one, Sam Freshman, made a similar comment.
Yes,
remember that?
That's right. You're right. Well, yeah, Sam was a.
And how many units does he have? Like, he's
got thousands. I mean, he buys them. He'll go in. But you know what Bill's talking about. Big shout out to Bill's employee Monica, who works at him. Right. So I think also people. It's people, systems, and culture. In the very beginning. I can attest to this. We didn't know what we were doing. So it's also hard in the very beginning when you're becoming an entrepreneur. What are your goals? Are your goals to scale to 6,000 units, or your goals just become financially free with maybe 100 or 150 units? I would do what Jake and I would build it. Start out, control it yourself. And then once you have those 100 units, maybe it's time to pass it off. I mean, Bill and Jake and Gina, we were stubborn. We wanted to continue on and we struggled on those between 100 and 500 units. It was difficult. It wasn't easy, but we got coaching, right? We got the mentorship, Jake. We had scaling up. We did traction. It really helped us to grow the business. And that's very important what Bill said. Property management and asset management are completely different. He didn't say that. I'm saying that, but property management and you know, owning a deal, running a deal are completely different. So make those different shifts. Maybe you partner with somebody like Jake and I did. Maybe you find another partner out there where somebody does the property management and you're out there, you're running the asset manager of the company, you're trying to grow the company. That may be an option, but I love that tip that Bill says, I want to learn stuff. I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn by doing, right? So we learned ourselves by property managing our own deals. And I know Jake does not like to get ripped off. He likes to know what's going on, what things cost, how to do something. So then when you become that entrepreneur and you get that next inflection point, all of a sudden you're able to manage people. How can you manage somebody if you've never done it before? You don't have the experience. I think that's what Bill is touching on. I love the framework that he's talking about.
Bill, you're in a very unique position because you get to see so many people's journey. You know, so many people come up through the Bill Hamm camp as successful multifamily operators, investors. What is something that you can tell the folks out there? We're gonna give a freebie here that you see folks early on. Like, what is the mistake that people can correct or fix early on that they continually make over and over again?
Yeah, probably. Trying to go too big too quick, I think would be the direct answer. And one of the other things, and it's kind of hard to speak to, is I think a lot of times people come on to the business with a misunderstanding of what real estate is. They've listened to too many of the high-flying, get-rich-quick gurus, the late-night TV commercials on you know, close your first deal and live at the beach forever, this kind of garbage. And so they come on to the business with too many sales pitches, believing that they were given information when they were not. They were given sales pitches. And so they come on and they get hit with real information, and the adjustment is stark.
Oh, this is a business.
Right, exactly. You know, right. And so that's why I think our students have been relatively successful compared to other programs, is because we don't start off with sales pitch. We start off with information and education right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other students that I've seen come on, I think, with a misunderstanding of the business. And so they're not prepared enough for what it really is. That causes a lot of failure. And then the other one is trying to go too big too quick.
Could happen with that?
Get nothing done.
Yeah.
Nothing. That's exactly what happens. You know, and that's the biggest problem, is that if you have no experience, no credibility, and you're out looking at $20 million deals because some guru told you to go big, go hard, or go home, and you're out looking at these massive deals, mm-hmm. back to possibility, probability. Is it possible for you to close that deal? Absolutely. Is it probable? No. And so what's likely to occur is you're going to get out there and spend 6 months, 9 months, a year banging your head on deals that are just way out of your league. You close none of them. And then you go, this sucks. Real estate sucks. This doesn't work. And you feel ripped off. You go home and then you never actually do anything with real estate. That's one of the biggest problems I see, is a misunderstanding of the business when the student comes in and they try and go too big, too fast, and they're shocked and they fall off and quit. So that's... And I really don't have a great answer as how to avoid that, other than working with someone like us who can really kind of, you know, hold your hand, but at the same time, kick you in the butt while holding your hand towards success and show you the real ropes, not the sales pitch definition of real estate.
Jake, do you mind if I add to that a little bit?
Yeah, and then I'm going to talk about my high school football coach.
Because I've learned a lot from Bill through this whole process, right? I'm going to share a couple of one or two Bill-isms. But the first thing, at Jake and Gino, we create multifamily entrepreneurs. Real estate is a business. And Bill and I have talked about this. Students who have a grasp of business and systems will succeed at a higher rate than students who just think of it as real estate. Jake and I got in, we thought of it as real estate. All we thought of was cash flow. That's all we thought of. No, multifamily is a business. You're buying a 25 unit here, 36 unit here. Those are all income generators. They need to be treated as a business, not just real estate. The next thing, famous Bill Hamm-ism, get there-itis. Yeah. Students get there-itis where they join and all of a sudden they got to get there. You go to college for 4 years and you get out with a degree and you're making no money. Put in 12 to 18 months of work. It took Jake and I 18 months to find the first deal. And I was educated and I had a little capital. Don't get the get there itis. That's right. So don't get that get there itis. Trust me. If you get it, you'll start making bad deals. Another Bill Hamm-ism. You'll start pencil whipping deals. You'll start making deals work when they don't work. Don't pencil whip a deal and don't get there itis.
Pencil whip the deals. That's right.
Yeah. I can go on for a little while this, but just a couple more because I think it's really important. Not focusing on a market, like Jake and Bill said, you need to know values. If you're in, when you're starting out and you're into three or four different markets, if you don't know that market really well and you don't create relationships with the brokers that get there right after 2 months, oh, there's no deals in my market. Well, guess what? We've been in the market for 7 years and there's no deals right now. And we know the market. You need to be an expert in your market. You need to create relationships in the market. Focus on one market. The next thing is not knowing all the strategies. When you first start out, the probability of using one strategy is not going to get you as many deals as the probability of knowing four or five different strategies. When Jake and I first started, it was just buy and hold forever. We didn't syndicate. We owner financed, but we didn't have any of those other strategies. We didn't know the three pillars of real estate. We didn't have the buy right, manage right, finance right. So learning all of that will make you become more successful. And I think I'll leave it off with my quote, like Bill's talking about, think big, start small. Don't worry about starting with a 6-unit. Shut off Instagram. Who cares if John closed a 300-unit deal? John probably has no equity in that deal, but he's pumping his chest. Who cares? You do not compare yourself to anybody else. You are your own journey. Focus on the 6-unit, because after that 6-unit, guess what, my friend? A 20-unit's on the docket. And then after that 20-unit, well, I don't have any capital. Well, guess what? Syndication and JV and your Uncle John, who just found out that you're in real estate, is going to put money in your deal. That's how it works. We started with a 25, then a 36, and then a year after that, we got into 136 units. And that's how it works. Don't be afraid of starting small and getting on that journey. Football,
and
bro.
As my high school football coach liked to say, go harder, go home, all right, to Bill's point. And that worked for him, and that's appropriate in high school football, but you're talking about a shit ton of money right now. And if you're going to come flying out of the gates with no experience and trying to get that 200-unit deal, you might be unlucky enough to get it because you probably don't know what the hell you're doing and you're going to implode. I think that's the fear and exactly what Bill's talking about. So you got to get educated, folks, and you got to know what you're buying, because there's people out there that have been doing this for a long time that are a lot smarter than you when it comes to multifamily. And if you're flying out of the gates in day one saying, I'm going to buy this 200-unit deal, you better be damn sure or have a good mentor riding by your side to poke some holes in it, because there's going to be some holes, especially in a hot market like this. I'm going to ask Gino this question, actually. Tell us again how our listeners can get the book.
Well, right now, they can go to creativeapartmentdeals.com, go on the website. Book is there. There's some other free resources on there. Once again, the masterclass is on there. Read the book. I mean, it's an amazing book. Bill's put his heart and soul into this. He wrote it years ago. He rewrote it again, added all this content and all this information in the book, The Three Pillars of Real Estate, The Spy Technique, Master Lease Options, Owner Financing. It's just an amazing book, and I'm proud to be part of that journey, because it really takes a team to put something like this together. When you're out there, use a spy technique, value for value. Bill had an amazing book, an amazing concept. We have the platform, we got together, and it's just been a great journey. So creativeapartmentdeals.com, you can buy the book there. You know, Jake, it's been a lot of fun. I've learned a lot through the journey, and that's what it's all about. It's all about growing. It's all about, you know, you think you know something, and all of a sudden, this technique may get you that next deal.
Hey, man, that's what it's all about. And Bill, if folks want to get a hold of you directly, what's the best way to reach out to TBH?
You can, well, it depends. If you're trying to do business with us through my team, we're at BroadwellPropertyGroup.com. So you can look us up there. You can leave messages at Broadwell Property Group. You can also reach out to us that way if you're interested in investing and doing business. And if you're trying to reach out to me personally, it's just Bill@BroadwellPropertyGroup.com. Or, yeah, BroadwellPropertyGroup.com. That's it. So you can just email me directly at that number. Or that email. And again, you can reach out to us through Creative Apartment Deals. That's our other website that I have with Gino, so you can reach out to us there. Those are pretty much the best ways. Yeah, reach out. And hey, if you got any questions or you need anything, let us know. Hope you enjoy the book. A lot of great information in there. I'm going to really kind of take you step by step through the process. I think you'll get a lot out of it.
G-Day, closing thought.
So do you mind if I share a little story with Bill and just go from where he was as a corporate pilot to now?
Gino, it's your platform, baby. You're running the show, whatever you want to do, okay?
Well, I've learned a lot about Bill, you know. So when he started as a corporate pilot, he was flying around these doctors, and it's really an analogy for real estate, right? You know, pilots really have to be dedicated. They have to have that framework. They have to do their systems and their checks, just what real estate investors need to do. So he's flying through a storm, he's telling me one time, and there's a doctor that says, we need to get there. It's the get there-itis. So what does Bill do? He listens to him. He goes through a storm cloud. Plane gets all full of ice, and his plane drops. It looks like he's going to crash, right? But I don't know, by the grace of God, plane de-ices, and he gets through it. The moral of the story that I think Bill thought was, you know what? I can't rush to get there. I should have gone around. I don't need to listen to anybody else. I need to check what my structure is, what my buy right, what my manage right, what my finance right is. I think that part led to, I would say, Bill saying, I need to become financially free. I need to, you know, be master of my own destiny. How do I do that? well, this real estate thing works out really well. Let me start in single families and wholesaling and all this where everyone says you need to start. I'm not even going to think about multifamilies yet. So he starts out in single family homes saying, you can't lose in real estate. Real estate always goes up. And we can discuss that. It goes up if you live long enough, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Eventually.
So he gets into it. He buys his first 400 units without walking into a bank. He starts educating and you know, and the funny thing is he's educating on these topics and no one really has any name for them. No one called the master lease options. He was doing stuff that really wasn't out there. And he's starting to put these concepts together, like the SPY technique, like the three pillars of real estate. And he's starting to grow his portfolio. And then all of a sudden he goes from the single family space to the multifamily space, starts scaling up a property management company. We have the fortune of meeting Bill at a boot camp, getting together, creating an educational platform and a coaching platform with Bill. And the rest is history. We decided to write the book together, launch this book, Creative Cash. It's an amazing resource right now. You need to buy this book because this is going to be relevant for the next 24 months. And you know what? Even 5 years from now, when the market cycle dips and we're all, market cycles are all over the place, it's one tool in the toolbox. And it's an amazing tool in the toolbox that has allowed us collectively to close on over $20 million in seller finance deals.
Boom shakalaka. TBH, G-Dad, appreciate everyone's time. Make it happen.
Thanks, guys.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody. Take care.